Satan,
of them.
Pratidha,
how many? Pratisankramaha, dissolutions. Tatra,
thereupon.
Imam,
unto the Supreme Lord.
Ke,
who are they?
Upashiran,
being saved.
Ke, who are they?
Who?
Svit,
may.
Anusherate,
serve the Lord while he sleeps.
Translation. Please describe how many dissolutions there are for the elements of material nature, and who survives after the dissolutions to serve the Lord while he is asleep. Purport. In the Brahma Sanghita, it is said that all the material manifestations with innumerable universes appear and disappear with the breathing of Mahavishnu lying in yoga nidra or mystic sleep. Yakarana navajale bhajati smayoga nidram ananta jagaranda saromakupa adhara shaktim avalambya param swamutim govindamari purusham tamang bhajami yasyaika nishvasita kalamata valambya jivanti loma vilaja jagarandanata vishnu mahansaya yasya kala visesho Govindamari Purusham Tamang Bhajami. Govinda, the ultimate and supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, lies sleeping unlimitedly on the causal ocean in order to create unlimited numbers of universes during that sleep. He lies on the water by his own internal potency, and he and I worship the original Supreme Godhead. Due to his breathing, innumerable universes come into existence, and when he withdraws his breath, there occurs the dissolution of all the laws of the universes. That plenary portion of the Supreme Lord is called Mahavishnu, and he is a part of the part of Lord Krishna. I worship Govinda, the original Lord. After the dissolution of the material manifestations, the Lord and his kingdom beyond the causal ocean do not disappear, nor do the inhabitants, the Lord's associates. The associates of the Lord are far more numerous than the living entities who have forgotten the Lord due to material association. The impersonalist's explanation of the word aham in the four verses of the original Bhagavatam, ahangivasam eva agre, is refuted here. The Lord and his eternal associates remain after the dissolution. Vidura's inquiry about such persons is a clear indication of the existence of all the paraphernalia of the Lord. This is also confirmed in the Kashi Kanda, as quoted by both Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, who follow the footsteps of Srila Sridhar Swami. Nachavante hiyat pakta Mahatyam prakayapadi ato chuto kile loke saeka sarvago vyaya. The devotees of the Lord never annihilate their individual existences, even after the dissolution of the entire cosmic manifestation. The Lord and the devotees who associate with Him are always eternal in both the material and spiritual worlds. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskachare Satarine. Na Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Vibhashadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Adhadvanam Bhagavan Stisham Katita Pratisankramaha Tatremanka Upashiram Kausvit Anusherate. Translation: please describe how many dissolutions there are for the elements of material nature, and who survives after the dissolutions to serve the Lord while He is asleep. This verse refers to Lord Mahavishnu, who is lying in the causal ocean in mystic sleep and slumber. His dreams are creating our reality. We are only existing in the dream of God. Isn't that wonderful? What you are seeing now is a dream of that cosmic entity who is also transcendental to the material modes. It is described as though it appears that the Lord is sleeping in His yoga nidra. It is a different sleep. The example which has been given is the rainbow. It seems that the rainbow is a bow like any other bow. But there is no string attached. In the same way, the Lord's activities appear sometimes like activities which we know from this world, but there are no three modes of material nature attached to those activities. Now, the question is here, who survives? And the answer is that, first of all, no living entity dies. All of us survive all the cosmic happenings which take place during the yoga nidra or mystic sleep of the Supreme Lord. The second answer which is given is that especially the devotees of the Lord are never annihilated, even after the dissolution of the entire cosmic manifestation. The Lord and the devotees who associate with Him are always eternal in both the material and spiritual worlds. A very interesting Leela of the Lord comes to mind when discussing about how the living entity and the devotees of the Lord are never annihilated. It is the Leela which is belonging to the two most cherished Leelas of the devotees of the Lord. There's the Gorvardhan Leela and the Damodar Leela. Both of these Leelas are very special to the devotees of the Lord, because both of them, in different ways, show the Lord's glories in protecting his devotees or relating with his devotees. And a very interesting, Leela, which I want to explain to you today, is the Damodar Leela, but because it is too long, it might take more time which we have. We have another half an hour. Aha, 45 minutes from now on, or from the beginning of the lake, from now on.
If we end a quarter to eight,
okay. If we end a dobro. Then I will explain the whole Damodar Leela. As we all know, the Lord's Damodar Leela is very special. It happened when the Lord was still very young, before 3 years, younger than 3 years. As we all know, Krishna is known as Hari, and the name Hari means he's the thief. For us on our level, the name Hari means that he steals away our misery, and we think of him in loving devotional service. So in Vrindavan, the Lord was also stealing something else. He was stealing hearts. And he did so in various ways. One of the ways is that he stole butter. Then he stole the hearts of the young unmarried gopis. So, this particular Leela of stealing butter, the Lord is just Raghunath, welcome. You just come in time. You just start with the Damodar Leela. Welcome. Come in. Come in. So what he used to do is, he used to go in the houses of the elderly gopis and secretly move about stealing the different forms of butter. Now there was one yogi, one gopi. Her name was Prabhavati, and she was the wife of Upananda. Upananda, of course, is one of the brothers of Nanda Maharaj. And she, in her house, Krishna came so often that just one day she just decided to capture him, and she waited. When he came, she called him and said, "Now we are going to show you. Now I've captured you red-handed. See, your hands are full of butter. Now I will go with you to Mother Yashoda, and she will give you a solid beating." "No, no, don't do it, Krishna. No, my mother is a little stern on me these days. Just don't. Anyway, so Prabhavati went. Nevertheless, pulling Krishna behind her. Then in the middle of the way, Krishna transformed himself into her little son. When Mother Prabhavati knocked at Yashoda's house, Yashoda said, "What is the matter? Ah, what is the matter? Your naughty little son, Krishna, is stealing all the time butter." I have brought him with me to show him to you for punishment. Yashoda looked at the boy and said, Prabhavati, that is your own boy. Prabhavati looked. Oh, came red and Ryan. And felt so embarrassed that she, without losing many more words, just left to her house. Then on the way, she still had that boy in the hand. On the way, Krishna transformed back into Krishna again. Hare Krishna, welcome. He transformed himself back again into Krishna and said, when you do this the next time, when you catch me once again, I will transform into your husband, Upananda. Then you really get the thought. In this way, Krishna was extremely naughty. Now, Mother Yashoda knew about this, hearing so many complaints, and she decided Krishna is the son of the cowherd king Nanda Maharaj, and he has to become the next king. But if he remains a thief, then what king will he be? He will be a crooked king, not a very straightforward character. And therefore she said, I must stop this stealing activity of Krishna. Now the reason why Krishna steals is that most probably my butter and yogurt is not good enough. So therefore she went into the herd of Nanda Maharaj and picked the very best cows which were there and engaged special sutras to cut grass from special meadows, wheat, and fed that to the cows so that the milk became very aromatic. And she took care of Krishna and preached to him and said, stop this. Don't be a butter thief. But Krishna, he had another attention. When Krishna stole butter, it was not for his eating pleasure, but for giving pleasure to his devotees, who loved so much to see Krishna entering into their houses and fearing that someone would catch him. And you know, they loved to oversee this, and they prayed secretly in the temples to Lord Narayan. Oh, Narayan, send little Krishna in my house again. I want to see him looking back and forth with his quick eyes and eating our butter. And they were preparing the butter, thinking, oh, may Krishna eat this butter. This was the whole meditation. This Vrindavan mood. So, all right. One day, Mother Yashoda was just having her pot on the oven to boil the milk and make some milk preparations from it. When all of a sudden, and she was nourishing, she was breastfeeding little Krishna. When all of a sudden, the milk and the butter in the pot decided to have a transcendental leela. It is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that the milk said, now there will be a special leela of the Lord. And it started to boil over. You have heard correctly, the milk is also a conscious entity in Braj. So it got going, the molecules started to go faster. And so the milk decided to boil over. And then Yashoda was running to the milk, and at that time Krishna felt very dissatisfied with his mother. He went up, he went to the butter, he threw a stone on the butter pot, bang! The butter top pot broke, and then he started to eat the butter, looking back and forth. This is how Krishna eats butter. We have a very nice painting that he sits before a butter pot, which is, you know, lying on the top. It's even there. Can't see it, but you can most probably see it. He was eating the butter. Now, and then he felt so angry at his mother that he decided to run away. So when Mother Yashoda returned, she saw the broken butter pot, but she didn't see Krishna. So she decided to find Krishna. She knew where Krishna had gone. How did he know? She knew this.
Butter trail.
Yes, the butter smeared footprints were all over. He had eaten a lot of butter, in other words. It was all over his transcendental lotus feet. So he was finally Mother Yashoda caught him, how he was sitting in the distance. He had broken more butter pots and was distributing the contents to the celebrated monkeys of Vrindavan. There was a reason why Lord Krishna distributed that butter to the celebrated monkeys of Vrindavan, because when he was in the as Lord Ramachandra in the Ramayana Leela, his monkeys didn't get enough food. They were all going through the forest, and there was little food. They were hungry when they attacked Ravan's kingdom. So he had promised them, when I next appear, you come also, and then we will have some good preparations for you. got a lot of butter, these servant monkeys. So, yes, so they went. This was all in preparation. Then Mother Yashoda, I will move on a little bit quickly, tried to catch Krishna. First it was not possible, but then Mother Yashoda finally was successful, and after a different leela happened, which I also cannot don't want to tell now, she finally managed to punish Krishna. First, Mother Yashoda wanted to use the stick, but when she saw that Krishna was so shocked and so terrified, when she stood with the stick, he thought, well, I will ruin the character of my boy. He will have too much fear of me. Then she decided to bind him on a mortar. And it was a long story, but finally she managed to do that. And Krishna, little baby Krishna, was there at the mortar of the mortar of Mother Yashoda. He looked around, and as he looked around, he saw two trees. The trees were two sons, were two cursed demigods. They were actually the trees, the personalities called Nala Kubera and Manigriva, and I really intend to speak on them this morning. They had done a terrible offense because they were drunken with wealth. Listen to the sad story. They were the two sons of Kubera, who once entered into the Nandakanana garden in order to enjoy with many women in the waters of the Mandikini Ganga. They were drinking alcohol and singing and enjoying with different demigoddesses. Then all of a sudden the saint Narada Muni came by. Narada Muni saw that they were hopelessly fallen. They didn't even have the decency to cover themselves. The girls immediately rushed out of the water when the great saint came and felt very ashamed. What did we do? I mean, it is really not so good what we did. But the two demigods were just so drunken with enjoyment and so on that they didn't pay any heed. It is described that there are four obstacles on the path of devotional service. One is to be pride, and there is pride due to an aristocratic background, pride due to physical beauty, pride due to knowledge, and finally pride due to wealth. Now, of all the different sorts of pride, that pride which comes from the aristocratic background, I am from a good family, and the proud which comes from wealth is the most dangerous. It is described in the Bhagavatam that the proud which comes from wealth even brings a person to be so cruel towards other living entities that he does not think there's anything wrong in slaughtering animals. It's described like this. A poor man can understand very easily by his own suffering that, I should not inflict suffering on other living entities. But a wealthy person, a rich person who has no material, let me say, knappheit, no material lackings, he can be very proud. I think our Sankirtan devotees know this when they come to these rich people in Düsseldorf at the Kö. I do not know if you have distributed there also. It is very difficult to approach these rich people. They often say schleich dich and so on. Don't know if you have made experience. It's at least for someone who, like me, who's not very expert in distributing transcendental literature, it was next to impossible to stop them. Next to impossible. So Narada Muni thought, I must help these proud, puffed up sons of Kuvera. And what he did is, he cursed them to become trees. Now this is something which is seen not very, this is seen commonly. Sometimes spiritual personalities do punish other living entities because they see that they are hopelessly fallen. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about this, that when a father sees a child, his child is so sick, but he lying down in fever, but he needs to take the medicine, what he does is he pinches the child. The child goes like, and wakes up from his dreams, fever dreams, and then only can take the medicine. Don't those of you who have been who are parents, or those of you who had little brothers. I remember I had sometimes to take care of my little brother when he was just, we were all very little, but I had to take care when the parents were out in the evenings. We had to take care when the brother was sick to give him this medicine, which I won't mention. It was a medicine which we don't take as devotees. So we had to waken him up. Sometimes we had to pinch him. So this is what Narada Muni did to these unfortunate proud creatures, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. He pinched them by cursing them. Now you become trees. Sometimes I do not know if you have experience. I have. Ow! And you think of something may be wrong with me, may have to change something now because of that pinching. So this is what Narada Muni did. And the two immediately said, "Oh, I'm sorry, we are so sorry, we have to become trees. Can't you do something special?" Narada Muni says, yes. "Yeah, I cannot stop you from becoming trees for a long, long time. I forgot how long. But you will become trees in the court of Nanda Maharaj, where you will see Krishna playing around. And then Krishna will help you in a special way to become relieved from the misery of being trees." So that's where they went. They became two twin Arjuna trees. And when Krishna now was bound to the wooden mortar, his eyes fell on these two trees. And he knew, these two are my devotees. They did something foolish. And as a result, my devotee Narada Muni has cursed them. But I will now liberate them. And he went between the trees, he went until the mortar, which he pulled behind himself, got stuck there, and he pulled. After three times pulling, trees burst down. And the two demigods, now liberated from the curse, came out of the tree and circumambulated Lord Krishna. They went around him and around and around. Then Krishna blessed him. "My dear devotees, you can now safely return. I assure you that you will not again fall into illusion. You will never forget me, and always continue your devotional service with love and devotion." I think that's a blessing which every one of us would like to have. So, this is what Nala Kuvera and Manigriva realized what they got. Now then, Krishna was, they went away. And Krishna was still on the mortar. And then Krishna began to smile, because he thought of something. Krishna thought, "Isn't it funny? I have just liberated these two, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, from the curse. I've delivered them from all the karma. But I can't run away. I'm bound here. I who can liberate all the living entities from their bondage cannot, or am bound by the bondage of the love of Mother Yashoda. I can't solve this situation here. I'm at the mortar. I have to wait until Mother comes and binds me free. Because I love her so much that I just want that this Leela goes on. Mother Yashoda has a feeling that she educates me so that I become a happy and good boy. See? Krishna felt bound by the love of his mother Yashoda. So then Yashoda came and untied him. I mean, she came and saw the two trees were broken down, and again she thought, demons, 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 everywhere demons. What is this child? I mean, she took Krishna, bound him free, took him and started to chant mantras for his protection. So I thought a little bit about these two, Nala Kubera and Manigriva. I think you agree with me that their fate is quite noteworthy. They became immovable trees because ultimately of their big pride, which came from their aristocratic heritage. Also, we sometimes can become immovable in our spiritual life due to our pride. Pride can happen due to many, many factors in the life of a devotee, but to be very general and very not so analytical, it happens due to the false ego. The false ego is that element which brings the eternal soul to identify with a material body. And all the problems which we do experience in this life are really only due to this false ego, which mercilessly binds us to a wrong conception, to the physical conception. Someone who is in false ego has great difficulties to call out these feelings to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His chanting of the Maha Mantra will only be the shadow of a chanting and will not really reach the ears of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as much as the sincere cry for help which is done in utter helplessness. We have heard that the chanting to be effective has to be done in the mood of a little child who calls after his mother. Then only will that chanting be fully effective. I think all of you have made the experience in Vrindavan when you went over Loi Bazaar, how the shop owners called after you, Hare Krishna Prabhu, Hare Krishna Prabhu, come, 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 come. You have this experience. And you know that this Hare Krishna is not really so spiritual. It is not the same as some devotee, nice Vaishnav, who chants before the deities, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So, yes, you know the mantra, but you know, there's a different quality of calling. Do you agree?
Yes.
Yeah. So, in the same way, and you don't listen so well. When he says Hare Krishna Prabhu, you say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and you walk on and don't entangle yourself. Isn't it that? That is, I personally, you know, I always put a shudder around my, when I don't want to be disturbed over my head, and just don't look at any at anything. Just look at the rickshaw floor and chant my rounds, because it's not so nice. Krishna is everywhere in Vrindavan, Prabhupada said, but not on the Loi Bazaar. So, a devotee who wants to be in that shopping center of ISKCON when he doesn't absolutely need a new shirt or whatever. Or has to shop for the temple and so on and so forth. So Krishna also listens to the quality of the chanting, and the quality of the chanting has to be done. You have to be free from the pride, otherwise Krishna doesn't listen to you really so much. I mean, he hears it, but he does not become attracted to such a chanting. There's something important to be said about chanting with full attention. This is really possible when we are free from this false identification. Chanting with full attention is really the best process for obtaining Krishna consciousness in this age. But the chanting with full attention is often put in danger by our distraction. I do not know if you personally have any experience with distraction. Our Gauranga Prabhu has just given us an example of it. Gauranga Prabhu has shown how it goes when someone falls asleep. to help us understand better. First his mind was going away, and then when his mind was going a little bit away, he was no longer with the lecture, and then when he was distracted, he fell asleep and totally we lost him for a minute only. He just wanted to give an example. It's not that he really... So this is what happens when we chant without attention. Our mind goes away first to some other object. We may think of fashion, or we may think of sweets, or we may think of novats, of money. You know, there, most of the time we think of the of a member of the opposite sex. Maybe, hopefully not most of the time, but it does come. and so on. And then or we think of a relationship which is a little problematic, maybe to our authority or anything. And then our mind gets pulled out of the chanting of the holy name. It is not there any longer. Only the tongue is vibrating, sound vibration. At that time, the mantra is not so potent. It is described by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur this type of chanting is only the outside of a chanting. He gives the example of a medicine, and I think in our Western civilization, we do have experience of this. Do you know this medicine which you can put together? And you can pull it, and you can put the powder. Sometimes devotees do not want to eat the shell of the pill because there is a question if there's gelatine in it or not. I heard many times there is actually gelatine, and it is not good for us because it is made from the product of the cow's hoof, as far as I'm not so expert, but something like that. So when you chant the holy name and your mind is millions of light years away, it's not really that the oshadi, the medicine of the holy name is present. It is only the shell is there. It resembles the holy name. The mind has to be there. The attention must be there. It is described when you feel that your chanting is full of inattention, you must you must bring that attention back by the following ways. One should strictly observe Ekadasi, all the Lord's appearance days, that means fasting, and festivals in association of saintly devotees, chanting and glorifying the Lord throughout the day and night. Please believe me, my dear devotees, when you feel that your chanting needs reform because you are unable, due to some period in your life, to fully focus on the chanting of the holy name. The best way is if you chant in the association of good devotees who are fully dedicated to the chanting on Vaishnava appearance days. On Lord's appearance day or Ekadasi. And you have to chant quantity rounds. Many rounds. I personally have experienced that I did this Namvrata in Vrindavan, and after some time the chanting was significantly improved just by chanting more rounds at a holy place. It says here, but the best place to observe these festivals where you really fix on chanting is in the holy dham, Mayapur, Vrindavan, Puri and so on. But even if you can't go, these festivals will rekindle the dying spark of spiritual taste. Wieder entfachen, nicht? Wieder entfachen, genau. My dear devotees, please know that this chanting of the holy names without distraction is really the panacea. Panacea means medicine for this age. I'm looking for a quotation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that there are three things, I can't find it unfortunately, three things we should observe. Maybe Dominique can help me, because on my last preaching tour, I was preaching to many congregational members about it. We should first of all see that during our chanting, we are undisturbed. Some of you are often very tired. This is not good. If you are too tired, then you can't chant with full attention. Take enough rest, even if it is more than you do normally. Sometimes the physical body, going through its different movements, does require a little bit more rest. Especially, I've found out in Kali Yuga, where the living circumstances are so bad, and we are so much in stress, we need maybe a little bit more rest. 6 hours should be enough. If you have good 6 hours, where you can sleep on one stretch, then it's good. The art is to somehow arrange your life that you can just sleep in one stretch. Then 6 hours are enough. But if the night is disturbed by stressy dreams and you have to always get up, or you're too nervous to sleep, really, that's very bad. Okay, so first thing, be undisturbed. Be at an undisturbed place for chanting. The second thing is, the third thing is, you must chant with confidence and enthusiasm. My dear Lord, I'm chanting your holy name full of enthusiasm and confidence. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Oh, Krishna, here we go again. Chanting your name and glorifying you. And you must have this mood where you can think of Krishna and be close to Krishna. That's the second rule. The third rule is, no inattention. That's what we are talking about. If you can chant like this the holy names, very good. But if you are but if you have not made an endeavor to be free from the clutches of pride, it will be very difficult. This is what the story of Nala Kubera and Manigriva teaches us. It's the anatta of pride, which brought them into this miserable situation of being trees. So this anatta of pride can also bring us away from our spiritual life, can bring us into a material situation, into a material conception of life, and then spiritual life can't reach us. We are immovable like trees. Therefore, dear devotees, trinarapi sunichena taro iva sahishnuna amani namana dina kirtaniya sadara hari. That's the secret of spiritual life, and you can ask Bhagavad Dharma Prabhu what this verse says and what it means. Our glorious leader of this wonderful Prasadam temple, Prasadam temple, yes. It's a Panchatattva temple, really. We should not call it Prasadam temple. But the service, the main service of the devotees here is Prasadam distribution and even Prasadam production and also distribution. I'm doing this purposefully. Those of you who are interested, they can ask this verse, what the verse means, Bhagavad Dharma Prabhu. It's an interactive class today, you know. Not all the answers are given from this spot, but from other perspectives also. Good. Do you have any questions regarding this? Yeah, Bhakta Vatsala Prabhu? Yes.
When you were speaking about pride due to birth, it occurred to me that as devotees we should of course be free from this because we shouldn't be on the bodily concept of pride.
Yeah.
But we have our second birth, and it's said that one is supposed to be also proud to be a disciple of your spiritual master, but is there a point where this pride goes over the bounds of propriety and goes towards more like a sectarian speech?
Yeah, it is described, for instance, the pride can manifest, I can give better lectures than others. This is an example which I have heard from the Acharyas, from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Pride can also manifest in, you know, I'm a man or I'm a woman, this physical identification. Pride can manifest in various ways. See, when we speak of being legitimate pride, it is free from malice against others. But proud, which is full of malice. Yeah, we should be proud. We are belonging to the Achyuta Gotra, to the family of the infallible. I'm sorry, your name is no longer Jaina Shingadev. Oh, I'm very sorry, it was not present in my memory. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you were explaining at the beginning of the class that even the milk was alive in Brajalita. Yeah, how we heard that everything in Brajalita is Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual world, is alive. So I was wondering, because I've talked with so many devotees about this and argued, what is the relationship and what kind of devotees are these that are like the grass or the trees?
Yeah.
What is their relationship to Krishna?
I know the answer which I have heard to this difficult question is, it is Shantaras, but it's a special type of Shantaras which you will find in Goloka Vrindavan. devotee there really serves one of the different other relationships. For instance, the milk here serves the Vatsalya Ras. It's not totally neutral. It serves. Oh, let this Leela manifest. I will boil over now. So it serves the relationship between Krishna and Yashoda. So it's not like the neutrality of the meditating yogis who will never become active in their relationship to Krishna, Shanta. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya really taught not about five rasas, but he propagated the four rasas only. Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. Shanta ras is not propagated by Mahaprabhu. These are very difficult subject matters. I personally feel if one wants to deal with them seriously and in a deep and satisfying way, one needs to enter the difficult realm of rasa tattva, a tattva or a kind of truth which at the present moment goes at least over my head and understanding. I think such questions, it's very, I personally have so much respect of this subject matter that I do not feel comfortable in just talking so brief, about it, because there's so many factors involved and so on. But if you want to get further information on what this devotee said, it's most probably the best if you ask him personally for further advices. He was a very last. We already 1 minute. No, we should. I don't want to. I want to be invited again by Bhagavad Dharma. He gave us already 15 more minutes. Let us stop here with great discipline, and we can answer this personally. No, this is such an important thing. But let me have 30 seconds more, Bhagavad Dharma, for explaining. This question I will answer privately. I wanted to say I have a nice prasadam lila, which is very interesting, I feel. This lila comes, the one who told it was Jayapataka Maharaj, and it's very, very amazing. In our devotee, in our movement, we have a devotee called Jayadev. He is a reincarnation therapeut in England, and he told once a story about someone whom he regressed. I believe it was something like, it was one birth before just the last life. Where are you now? Please tell me. You know, he was in this half awake in this state. You know, please tell me. And he said, I don't know. I'm flying towards one building. Ah, what type of building it? It's a little, it's a holy building. Oh, he said, a church? No, it's one of these Hindu things. Ah, is it maybe like a temple? Yes, it is. Acha, I'm seeing there are these two figures in the back, and I'm flying there. But then smelling some very good food, which is, and I'm landing before that, wie sagt man, before that, before those figures on something, yes, like a plate, yes. And I'm sucking. He's not pigging, he's sucking. Apparently it must be some type of insect. And then someone comes and batch! This was it. You know. Now Jagat Pataka Maharaj said, I don't know if this is true, you know, but I think even if someone doubts it is true, it is a nice story. Now, a little while ago, I met this Jayadev in Radhadesh. We were invited for the summer festival to preach there to the people. And he told me the same story. The way he told it to me, it's with so many details and with full conviction, he said, Maharaj, I am convinced that someone who eats prasadam, he will definitely, even if it's an animal, he will definitely get a human form of life, because this just taught it to me. And now, a little while ago, in a lecture by Sri Vishnupad, it was not a lecture, it was a presentation in the social development discussion. There he himself also was saying that after 700, someone who eats prasadam, maximum after 700 births, he goes back home, back to Godhead. He doesn't have to wait longer. When I heard it, I thought, well, there's some chance for me.